At AVNR, our mission is to humanize robotics. We decided to create this podcast series to help you demystify the world of robotics and discover what some of the brightest minds in the field are doing. Welcome to Robotics for All Podcasts by AVNR.
Lenton Joseph is an author, roboticist, and robotics entrepreneur from India. He runs a software company called Cubotics Labs in Koshi, Kerala. He has 10 years of experience in the robotics domain, primarily in robotic operating system, ROS, OpenCV, and PCL, or Point Cloud Library. He's authored 8 books about ROS, he's a TED speaker, and has his master's in robotics and automation. Every new conversation becomes my new favorite. Lenton is a consultant to startups who are changing the robotics world, and he breaks down fascinating topics like social robots. Hopes everyone enjoys the show. Here we go. Well, Lenton, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Michael.
Yeah, no, I was really excited to talk with you. You know, I've spent the past 20 years in our team at AVNR. We focus a lot on industrial robots. Mm-hmm. And so, platforms like Finuc and ABB and the industrial space like that. And I got interested in the open source space. Well, actually, it wasn't through robots. I really got impressed with the open source space through, right now it's getting a lot of press, but through Bitcoin and all that. So back in 2012, and I started to see the power of the community developing in the open source. So, when I started to join your course, and we could talk a little bit about it later, but that's what sparked me to, it's a different world, the open source space, and there's a lot of advantages to that. It's been what, 10 years that you've been developing around ROS?
Yes.
So it'd be interesting to hear a little bit from your perspective, what the history of ROS, which is for the listeners, is called the Robot Operating System. It's an open source platform for mobile and not only mobile robots, but robots, drones, it can be stationary robots. But it'd be interesting to hear from you some of the history of it and how you got into it.
Yes. So when we talk about history of ROS, it's actually started in 2007. So it's actually started in Stanford, but the name was not there actually. The name was coined by another research company called Willow Garage. It's actually in the US. So in Stanford, there is a person called Morgan Kuechly. He started a project. And that project then converted into ROS in Willow Garage, actually. So in 2008, the company called Willow Garage, they taken those project from Morgan, and they developed and they named the project as ROS. Okay, and from 2008 to 2012, there are a lot of development happening in ROS framework. And after that, what happened was like the Willow Garage actually shut down. Then from 2013, the Open Robotics started. It's a non-profitable organization. And currently, those guys are maintaining ROS, ROS and Gazebo. So I'm actually hearing about ROS in 2010 during my bachelor's project. And I didn't do project in ROS because I didn't know ROS at that time. But I heard about ROS from a friend project. So he was like prototyping his project using ROS. At that time, the distribution, ROS distribution was ROS Diamond Black or something. And not so developed. There are a lot of bugs and it is very difficult to set up. So I thought, I like the platform, but still there are a lot of things to do. So I thought, maybe I will not try this. But after that, after my project, I heard this, about ROS. I have watched some videos, like some interesting videos from Willow Garage. So then I was like, why can't I try this? Maybe I can give a try on this framework. And then I started working on ROS. So I really interested to ROS because like I used to watch the videos from Willow Garage. And if you just go to YouTube and search for ROS demos or ROS at Willow Garage, you will get tons of videos. So those videos are very, very good and so interesting. So I just started working on ROS after seeing this, after watching these videos actually. And initially, it was very tough because it was a, it was not like a framework. I mean, not like an SDK or something. It's an entirely a different world to me. So I started learning one by one. And during learning, I started making videos, YouTube videos, and started like writing blog posts. So then, so that was the start in 2010, if I'm remembering. During my bachelor's degree, I heard about Rose and started working on it. And luckily, after my bachelor's, I got a job from a robotics company. And during working in that company, I also start working on Rose for them, actually. So that company was mainly working on robotic arm. So I just built some packages to work with that robotic arm using Rose. So, yeah, so that's how it's all started. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. And you mentioned, you know, that ROS wasn't so easy. And a big component of what you do now is education, right? Yes. So you spend, you know, I'm always impressed with, you know, how the breadth of topics that you go through in your course, because the platform that ROS and the ecosystem has really, it's very deep.
Yes.
I wouldn't say that it's easy yet, but I think it's, you know, when I've gone through it, it's a pretty solid. It's not very buggy at all once you have everything kind of lined up. As it's evolved, you know, what are some of the key like focus areas that you see ROS really unlocking the potential of some of the mobility and the robots? Is it around the navigation and the algorithms for the SLAM? Or do you see some of the newer hardware that's come out as being very important to the industry?
Yeah, so when we start with Rose, one of the project, most people are doing is building an autonomous mobile robot. Okay, so for me also, in 2014, I created an autonomous mobile robot, which is which is looking like TurtleBot. Okay, so. So after doing that project, I got a lot of understanding. So I think the main attraction in using Rose is these kind of autonomous mobile robot. Like you can easily prototype an autonomous mobile robot using ROS because there is different packages available, ready-made packages, so that you can customize it and you can make it work. But if you think about building all the stuff from scratch, it is very difficult and time consuming. So mostly, people are doing people are attracted to building this autonomous mobile robot first. After that, they're also interested to build like this robotic arms. So I used to see a lot of project using robotic arm and ROS. So initially there was a package called arm navigation in ROS. So that is actually now moving. So using arm navigation, we can do a lot of manipulation work. So these are two attractions in ROS. You can easily set up, easily in the sense, compared to building everything from scratch. Okay, so you can easily set up the autonomous mobile robot as well as a robotic arm, like maybe 7DOF or more than that, using ROS packages. So that is that attractive part in ROS, the capabilities of ROS. Even more than this, there is perception. There are a lot of packages in ROS for doing perception. So that is also the attraction of ROS. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And in industrial robots, that the perception was a key thing. So when I started in 2000, robot guidance, so where you would mount a camera on the end of the robot arm and tell a robot how to pick up a part, that was, you know, that wave was just beginning kind of back there and it was sweeping through. So I did a lot of work in the automotive arena, you know, engine blocks and cylinder heads and picking them out of bins, or they weren't bins, they were dunnage. So they were loosely placed, yes. But you had a clear view of that. Now today, some of the perception I see bin picking is, we tried that many years ago, but now it looks a little bit more real, some of these bin picking applications.
Yeah.
Now, So I mentioned I came across Ross a little bit by mistake. And, you know, one of the things, it seems right now the ecosystem is kind of exploding. You know, there's a lot of startups. If I go back 5 years, you know, we're lucky here in Canada, we've got ClearPath Robotics, which is a really interesting company. I think they were spin off out of Willow Garage, if I'm remembering right. So I'd kind of watched them for a little while, but then all of a sudden, you know, self-driving cars started to come out and people said it was the real thing. And then you started to see a lot of startups in mobile robots. Today, most industrial platforms have a plant or have a mobile robot, like KUKA has a mobile robot. So I said, wait a second, there's something that took us a step further and allowed this ecosystem to flourish. What are some of the more interesting projects or exciting projects that you watch develop over time?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, like I used to get interested in ROS because of the projects that done in Willow Garage. I mean, a lot of demo videos I have watched in YouTube. So that actually, that was a starting point for me to start with ROS. So from 2010 to 2020, I was just checking for new projects. So from the community, I'm seeing a lot of new projects, like regarding the autonomous navigation. There are a lot of mobile robots coming for different application, for delivery, food delivery, or like even ROS is now using for self-driving car. Maybe not maybe in the product, but maybe for a prototype they're using it. And for industrial purpose, there is a separate stack of ROS called ROS Industrial for manipulation, then applications like bin picking, then sorting. And also I'm also seeing a lot of application in the warehouse automation, logistics, yeah. Warehouse robots, a lot of robots are coming. And most of the robots are powered using ROS. So it's from my opinion, ROS is actually flourishing. And the main reason is that the right product at the right time. Because when ROS released in 2009 time, there was no good framework available in robotics to program robots. So ROS was the name actually is very interesting, robot operating system. It's actually very catchy. And at the same time, it's actually open source. And so if the project is open source, there will be a community revolving around it. So I will say the right product at the right time. And if you check for good framework for robot programming, you can't find a better framework compared to ROS. So I think that was the that was the main point here, the right product at the right time.
And the right time.
Yeah, and people start using it. And yeah, then the community start growing. And and ROS is not only for the companies, it's actually actually designed for researchers. And right. If you check the code, mostly the code is like research code. It's not designed for product or something. So even ROS is designed for research applications, slowly it's gained attention for product. So I think there are a lot of changes, modification came to ROS packages and then those packages are compatible with the product. The code quality. So from 2010 to 2020, I'm seeing a lot of development, mostly in research application as well as products, robot products. So and also the ROS 2 is here, but a lot of companies are focusing on ROS 2 because that is actually product ready. You can use it in a product, but still there are a lot of things to do in ROS 2 because a lot of from my perspective, a lot of packages having bugs and all. So it's actually like catching up, but I believe ROS 2 will be the next, but I think it will take time to get stable still when we start working with ROSE 2, you will get a lot of issues. So ROSE 1, if you work with ROSE 1, you can easily prototype. So that's why I started my course in ROSE from ROSE 1, so that you can easily start with ROSE and understand the concept, then you can slowly migrate to ROSE 2. So that is the thing.
And I think that's the power of the open source community is, when a platform is first developed, it will be buggy, but you're leveraging the power of the crowd to fix it. So over time, these bugs will get taken care of and it'll be well tested too over time, because you have a number of projects and different avenues of approaching a problem that really stress test code. So in the industrial space, there's two trends, or actually it's one problem and one trend that I'd love your opinion on. Ever since I've been part of robotics, there's always been in automation in industrial, you have many companies out there offering products. So, when you look at the industrial robot space, there's so many robots out there, and each controller has its own programming language.
Exactly.
And, also communication protocols, there's been more standardization on that. That was a bigger problem. There's been a big move towards some standardization around some protocols. Now, the ROSE Industrial, I don't know how much exposure you've had to it, but do you see that as a potential solution for the many different colors and brands of robots? But, if a company is looking to innovate and they innovate around ROSE Industrial, that would allow them to service their customers. If one company likes ABB, the other company likes FANUC, that would allow a common framework to be able to deliver in the type of robot the customer wants.
Yeah, so ROSE Industrial is like, it started, I think, in 2013, and it's like ROSE for industrial robots. And the thing is that, as you mentioned, most of the robotic companies, mainly in industrial automation, they have their own software and their own controllers. And most of the controllers and the softwares are proprietary, so we can't do much customization. So ROSE Industrial is like, we are like overclocking the industrial robots, like adding a lot of sensors and do some extra things that a normal industrial robotic can't do. Maybe normal industrial controller can't do. Okay. So adding a lot of sensors and intelligence, like deep learning, those kind of thing. So that's actually the purpose of ROSE Industrial, adding a lot of new things on the top of the industry.
It's like opening up.
Opinion, the ROSE Industrial stack is still, not very mature. I mean, it's actually started in 2030, but I'm not sure that it is compatible for a full-fledged product. I mean, full-fledged application, industrial application. But still, we can do a lot of things using ROSE Industrial, but I'm not sure we can replace the existing controllers with the ROSE Industrial software. Because the existing controllers are well tested. The companies are well tested, their software, and it's very stable. But regarding the ROSE Industrial, I'm not sure it is doing that job. But the ROSE Industrial stack will suit if you want to explore, a lot of functionalities, like new things like bin picking, then a lot of things using new sensors like a depth camera, lidars, those kind of thing. Then the existing controllers, existing robot controllers can't able to do the job. So we have to rely on some frameworks. So ROSE Industrial is filling that gap, I think.
Okay.
So, yes.
So it's an enhancement. It's not a replacement, it's an enhancement.
Yeah, it's an enhancement, exactly.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you're absolutely right. I mean, in the industrial setting, we have robots that have been in the field for 15 years. So these companies do a great job, and those are solid machines that we put into the field.
Yeah, and they will not change. Yes, and they will not change the software. Because once they are get stable, they will not do much modification in the software. So so ROSE Industrial, using ROSE Industrial, we can enhance the capabilities of robots, but it's not a replacement. As you mentioned, it's an enhancement. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the trend that I see happening that I'd love your opinion on. So, you know, you're familiar with cobots, collaborative
yes.
robotics.
Yes.
So at first their promise was, you know, robots and humans working side by side.
Yes.
But really what allowed them to take off was the simplicity of using them. Mm-hmm. You know, you without very much code at all, you can move the robot, teach points, and mm-hmm. it was a very intuitive step. Now, in the space that I live in is a robot integrator, that erodes some of our expertise. You know, you could look at it, well, if you see a lot more do-it-yourselfers in the field. And when I look at this ROS open source platform and I start to see the way the ecosystem is growing so fast right now and the different cost-effective hardware, my feeling is that, you know, the robot integrator of the future, we're going to see a lot more purpose-built robots where people are designing the actual robot, testing it, and putting that into the field, as opposed to using industrial off-the-shelf robots. I see a high-end integrator, someone with a great team, deep expertise, going moving away from these pre-built robots to custom robots. I don't know, do you see a future where we're going to see a lot more custom or purpose-built robots being deployed into the field?
Yeah, so, yes. So the thing is that in order to build a robotic arm, nowadays it's being a very easy job because actuators are mostly modular actuators, and you can build your own robot now because you will get modular actuators and you can build your own robot. And if you can build a software to control it, then you can build your own robot. For example, yeah. if you see a robot called X-Arm, it's a Chinese robotic arm. There are a lot okay. of robotic arm coming from China. So one of the arm that I am interested on is X-Arm. So these guys created their own robotic arm. It's very similar to these universal robotic arm and all. Maybe the actuators may be different, but the purpose is like cobots kind of thing.
Okay.
So they belong to cobots. So they have the ROS-based software, okay? And their actuators is also available. So you can buy those actuators and you can build your own modular robot. So I think nowadays the hardware is become more modular. And it's a time where we can experiment with these modular components. So you can build your own hardware, and using ROS, maybe you can have an interface, and we can able to control it. Maybe you don't need to depend on the existing robots because of the modularity of the hardware. We can easily do this. I'm not saying it is very easy, but yeah. if you do a research, maybe we can able to do. I'm seeing a lot of companies are coming up with these cobots, mainly from China. So, and that is very cost effective too. If we compare the cost with the existing big companies like Universal Robot, the cost is very less. So I'm seeing a lot of, future for this customized robotic arm, especially. So, and the hardware is also modular. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's really impressive. Some of the technology now that's coming out of China, you know, my analogy is when here in North America, in Canada, we love to watch the U.S. news, you know, what's going on in the United States. And
yeah.
and one of the statistics there in the defense world, the U.S., they invest more than, let's say, the next four or five countries combined, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you look at China, that's their strategies in robotics. So they invest more than probably the next five or six countries combined in robotics.
Yes.
And the applications we're seeing coming out of there, I think we're going to be kind of mimicking here in North America some of those applications for years to come, because they're innovating at a pretty quick rate right now.
Yeah, so I would like to say an experience of me. Like, I had an opportunity to attend an event called World Robotics Conference that was happened in Beijing, I think in 2017. So there was a forum called Rose Forum or something. So I was a speaker, and also the Brian Gerke, he's the CEO of Open Robotics, so he was also there, and also one of the founder of Ross Industrial. These guys were there. So there was an exhibition in that conference. Okay. And that exhibition was very, very good because there are a lot of robotics companies from China. So in that conference, you can see many companies who are coming up with a robotic arm, then social robots, mobile robots. So the list is actually very, very huge, and they're actually innovating in various domains. So so I think China, even Japan is investing a lot in robotics. Yeah. I'm not sure about US. US also doing a lot of things in self-driving car, but I think these countries are also doing good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned social robots.
Yeah.
And I know you did a project in your course. You talked about your project in social robots. Can you define what a social robot is for me?
Yes, exactly. So a social robot is like a robot in which we can interact with. So, for example, you can compare it with Siri. So what Siri does is that you can ask questions to Siri and it will answer, right? So similarly, a social robot is like an agent in which we can ask questions and it will reply intelligently. And at the same time, it can express emotions. Like maybe we can compare a social robot with a pet, maybe a cat or a dog. So it is having the similar aspect. So like a social intelligence, like human, it can interact and talk with us. And maybe some robots can express, they can't talk, like they can express emotion like that. So I think the importance of social robot is that, like, in current scenario, there are a lot of people are in loneliness. Okay, yeah. So they maybe need some pets, or they are also looking. I mean, one of the alternative is that these social robots. It's still in not in very good shape, I will say. If you check for robots like Jibo, that is one of the famous social robot, but it's actually they closed their operation. They shut down their operation. So I think social robot is still in not in mature shape, but I think it's trending because there are a lot of scope, a lot of application that we can do using social robot, like autistic therapy.
Here over the past 2 years with the pandemic, you know, that the need for that. So in North America, in my circle of friends, it's still a little bit science fiction, the social robot. I don't think people, I think they would be, there's not a weirdness, but a hesitation to trust the companionship of a machine, right? So I think that has to be overcome. But, you know, during the pandemic, I have an aunt that's in a nursing home here in Montreal, and I haven't been able to visit her because of the restrictions. So there'll be a period of month or 2 months where the only contact she has is from nurses and the people not from family, maybe over the phone. And so it's quite a lonely time. And, you know, this pandemic, it's going to wear on a little bit. I think we're going to get better. There's going to be variants and stuff like that, but we're still going to be cautious for a while to come, in my opinion. So, you know, certainly I see the need, whether it's a social robot or it's, you know, when I walk into these homes and these facilities, and I think China and Japan, they're much further ahead than we are in this, but there's a lot of jobs that these mobile robots can do. And we'll have to rethink our infrastructure a little bit to allow for, you know, larger doors and you know, the way we organize the floors and stuff like that. I think that needs to be thought, but there's a bright future, I believe, for helper robots, social robots, once we get over that stigma and we find the right combination of technology and compassion and, you know, being able to relate to things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So the one report that I've been following a lot, I don't know if you've looked at it, but there's a U.S. robotics roadmap and they release it every 4 years. And they released one, the latest one in October of 2020, so October last year. And they break down the robots areas or the markets into a few segments: manufacturing, logistics, transportation, quality of life, medical, feeding the planet, and security and safety. So they include drones as well into this grouping. So what area do you think is the most, what for you, what is the most exciting area in some of those? You know, I spend a lot of time in manufacturing. You talked about some of the projects, but, you know, when you're doing your consultation and stuff and you've seen the different companies, where's your passion? What do you find the most exciting?
Yeah, so currently if you check the list of robotics companies in US, you can see most of the companies are working in the transportation domain, like self-driving cars. Mm. So I am also interested in that because we can apply a lot of things in a self-driving car, in the sense the technologies, list of technologies like mapping, then localization. So I am also very interested in working with these kind of technologies. So in the technology wise, a self-driving car, the transportation domain is my favorite pick because I can work on all the technologies that I'm interested on. But so from the list of technologies that you mentioned, I think all the domains are very interesting. But I am mainly focusing on the self-driving car domain. But if you take the logistics, warehouse, then medical field, there are a lot of things are happening, especially in the medical field. If you check the robots like Da Vinci, better robots coming compared to Da Vinci. So if you take all the domains, as you mentioned, there are a lot of work going on, but mostly in the current scenario, a lot of companies are working on the self-driving domain, in the transportation. So in near future, maybe we can see a lot of self-driving car because they are doing research for a long time, right? After the DARPA challenge, the Google started the revolution. Now a lot of companies are doing it. So I think maybe in the upcoming year, we can see a lot of product related to self-driving cars and the transportation domain maybe flourish. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the self-driving cars, that would go a long way to helping harden a lot of these software platforms because they'll be so tested for safety purposes.
Exactly.
We're going to see some frameworks that are really solid come out
of that. Yeah, and one thing is that even we can spin out, we can create robots and we can use the self-driving car software for other purpose, like for delivering food, delivering things in a hospital. So these are some applications, like if we can deploy the same software in robots, not in cars, maybe in small robot, it can do much better job. So I think this self-driving car revolution is it's a big thing. And in the upcoming year, we can see a lot of application using self-driving car or using the self-driving car technology. Yeah. So that is the thing. Yeah.
One of the areas that really sparks my imagination is all the they just landed on Mars with a mobile robot Perseverance, and in that was a helicopter, and they made that open source. All of the framework, the software for that helicopter is open source, and so I find it's amazing watching some of these missions. Here in Canada, we have a company called MDA. And if you remember the space shuttles, the Canada arm, there was the arm that did some of the space work on the old space shuttles. So this company came up with that. And I had a tour of their facility, and they started a robotic division to approach industry, and they talked a lot about missions, right? So they were, you know, in the manufacturing space, we deal with, you know, 10 second cycle times or cycles or 30 second. You go above an hour. In their world, they were talking about missions of 2 months, 3 months, and they're doing all their mission planning with these robots for that. And it's really fascinating to see that it's a different mindset approaching robotics. Now, maybe we can shift gears a little bit and talk about more about your courses and you've written a number of books.
Yes.
So what's the new book that you're working on?
Yeah, so it's actually the third edition of Mastering Rose for Robotics Programming. So so the thing was like when I checked my Google Scholar page, I was getting a lot of citation from the Mastering Rose book. Okay, so the current version, that is Mastering Rose second edition, is mentioning about Rose kinetic Geigers. So it's actually outdated. I mean, slightly outdated. So we are actually, updating the content a bit, and also the version, Rose version. So currently we are updating with Rose Noetic and with some few new chapters. Okay, so it seems like a lot of people are using this book. So that's why we plan to update the book. And yeah, so that is a new book coming, but it will take some time, maybe 4 or 5 months, because even updation is actually difficult, because we have to rewrite some portion of the chapter. We have to change a lot of software mentioning in that, because software working on Kinetic may not work with Noetic, some softwares. So we have to do modification. So it's not easy. And also I'm doing consultation and the course. So It's very difficult to get time. So yeah, I'm actually trying to write on weekends. Yeah, so these things are happening now. And regarding the course, it's actually like an experiment for me, because rather than consulting, I was so interested in education. So I think if I from 2011 itself, I used to write mainly blogs. So I had a blog and I used to write about Rose and creating YouTube videos, like Rose tutorials mainly. And after that, I used to write, and in 2014, I got an invitation to write a book. So initially, I thought that it is easy, but it was not. Actually, when I started writing, I understood the pain of a first author. So it was very difficult. And because of my interest in ROS, because of my passion in robotics, I keep on writing it. And that's how the robotics using Python actually came. So yeah, that was my first book. And after that, I got interested in writing. I got the formula, how to write. So Then I started working on Mastering Rose, then Rose for Rose Robotics Project. So these things actually came. And after writing this book, I got requests from readers like, what about doing a course? And when I researched about the course, I understood that like simply recording may not work. Maybe if I can give a support to the course members, it would be great. And yeah, mostly people are interested to attend live sessions. So that's why I started Rose Developer Learning Path in 2020, July. Yeah, okay. So I started, and it was, it was an experiment, and I made some plans, like I can do consulting these days, and in my free time, I can dedicate for course. So most of the content is based on the book, but even that may not be enough for taking classes, because taking classes is much difficult compared to writing books, because writing books, we can like refer some sections and we can do, but like talking about the topics is very difficult.
Yeah, so, for sure. Yeah. And I find it, what has been really great about your course, like you said, is for me has been the support. So the way I learn is, you know, I listen to what you're saying and, you know, your example, but the minute I can replicate that, I get it. Right. So that that's important for me to be able to look at it and then replicate it. And, you know, as you mentioned, the it's quite deep. Some of these frameworks, like tuning the SLAM algorithm or tuning the move base, it's pretty intense. So having the support from yourself and the other course members, that's been a huge benefit of your style of course.
Yeah, so teaching rows is again like very difficult thing, and support is also difficult because I am working on some packages, and I didn't get that specific error, but when you start working on the same package, you may get an error. So then I have to search for it. So because of the great community, big community around ROS, we will get some support. That is the good thing about ROS 1, because there are established community. So even if you have an issue, you will get support from answers.ros.org or maybe from Stack Overflow even. Yeah, so that is a good thing. But in ROS 2, if you're working, I'm not seeing, much support because it's just started, right? So
started. Yes. Yeah. So for maybe talk a little bit about your company, Cubotics. It's a consultation company. So
yes.
What's your mission?
So it's actually very simple. Like I started working on a robotics company in 2011. And after that, I worked there for, 3 years. And after that, I started to, build my own company because I used to work on different projects and I need some flexibility. So the plan was not to build a big company with a lot of employees, maybe create a small team, maybe less than maybe five, and do some interesting projects. So I was so interested to do product development, maybe for startups and all. And also interested to do this robotics education. So these are the two domains that I'm expertise of or interested in. I'm not very interested in developing a specific product and work on it for years. I'm not very interested, but I'm interested on initial cycles of product development, initial phases of product development. So I just started my company started as a consultation company who are mainly working on ROS framework. So that is again like an experiment because I really like this ROS framework because of the project that I'm seeing in the YouTube, and I interested to work on this platform. So interest lead to start a company. And I didn't think much about the future scope of ROS. So when I start my company, I consider myself as a ROS developer, simply as a ROS developer. And I assume that I may get some projects, maybe a ROS related project, and I will do that. That's all. But if you check ROS, scope at that time, it was very, very, very less in 2014. But still, I just started because of my interest. But I was started getting projects at that time when we compared with some existing software framework. Like if you compare with maybe Java or some existing software with ROS, the scope of ROS is very, very less at that time. So, but still I started and started working. My main aim, do some interesting projects using ROS and keep a lean team, then educate people on ROS mainly. So these are the main objectives of robotics.
So for companies looking to either add an enhancement to their ROS project or get started into it, that's you're a good person to reach out to and look at that that acceleration, that boost to get into the framework and maybe enhance their use of it?
Exactly. So my main clients are like startups and big companies are also there, but they are actually planning to start with a product. Okay, so okay. Initial prototyping will be done by me. So those kind of work that I'm mainly doing. And yeah, so I'm getting enough work, and I'm happy with this. And yeah, so yes.
No, that's great. Yeah, you sound like a busy guy. I always, when I listen to your courses, I wonder how you juggle all the mandates you've got going on. So it's really impressive. And and I'm fortunate to have this time with you, and I really appreciate you coming on our podcast. We covered all the topics that I had. Is there anything that, you know, that we talked about that you'd like to touch upon again, or any areas of ROS that you think would be interesting to highlight?
Okay, so I think regarding the ROS on industrial, I just want to hear from you, like, what are the applications that you are planning to work with ROS on industrial domain? So
So in the industrial domain, like, one of the challenges that we have is coming up with a one size fits all system or application that can be adopted to many different industries, right? So in the manufacturing space, you know, we spend a lot of time in aerospace and medical implants, but then for robotic finishing and inspection, you might have faucets, you might have different hardware that also need that type of expertise. I see some tools in ROS that may help us be faster at adapting and enhancing the implementation of some of these robots into those spaces. So if you want to have a more dynamic setup, I see that potentially as being a really interesting area to apply some of this. I also see, you know, growing up in automation, you know, back in the 2000s, robots were planted to the floor, right?
Okay.
And you would, if you want a manufacturing line, you think about the car assembly line. I spent a lot of time putting cameras and robots on the assembly line. And then slowly they moved to AGVs, but with the wire in the floor. And so I watched that evolution happen, and it was still built, that type of automation was still built for the big players where the high volume. But now with the number of robot projects out there and the number of companies working on robots, one of the promises or one of the targets that the robot industry has according to that roadmap is that over the next 5 years, the price of a robot should be cut by four. That's okay. One of the things they're saying, they're predicting. And I can see the trend we're getting there. So it's not just for the big guys anymore. The SME, small, medium-sized companies, they need a strategy to adopt robotics. And I can see some of these mobile platforms as being a great way for them to adopt it without having to re-engineer their whole shop floor, right? They can leverage some of this technology with the existing infrastructure. So I see that as an exciting area as well, too. You know, taking those mobile robots out of the logistics house and bringing it more and more into the manufacturing space.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So education for us is a big component, and you know, we'll talk offline, but that could be we're thinking about maybe it's a good boost to have yourself come in and talk about some of the ROS platform and educate some of our robotics guys. So that could be an interesting thing for us to talk about as we go forward here.
Okay.
Well, great, Lenten. You know, we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I know you've got a busy schedule. So once again, thank you so much for agreeing to coming on our podcast. It's been fantastic and a lot of fascinating topics.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me, Michael. This was an interesting session because I could share some insight of me to you. Like, yeah, and also I got some information from your side also. Yeah,
yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's great to have a conversation and a little bit of one-on-one time to talk through some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks.
So this concludes the episode of Robotics for All podcast by AVNR. If you don't want to miss another single episode, don't forget to subscribe to our show in your favorite podcast app. Thank you very much, everyone, and we'll talk again soon.